Ahoy, mateys, and welcome to Expedition Cartoon, where my brother and I explore the vast and beautiful worlds of animation for the perfect place to call home. We are your captains, Alec and Lou, and today we are exploring a classic. I think one of the first worlds that people probably think of when they think of the best worlds of animation ever. Of course, it was a book first, so it wouldn't be fully fair to give Disney all the credit, but we are in fact talking about Wonderland today.
Yes, yes. This one has a special place in my heart. I won't go into details, but I was known as Cheshire for a long period of my life.
Yeah, it's a good nickname, Lou. I also had nicknames. It was Loser, Nerd, Ugly. Whoa. People were so nice.
Whoa. Sounds like you could use a trip to Wonderland.
Sounds like I could. I could use some escapism right now.
Nice.
I actually was called Twig, real name.
I remember that.
Shaggy.
That's not offensive, I don't
know.
No,
I've been called Redwood.
I think you should explain that one.
I believe it was because I am tall like a tree.
There you go.
So lots of things about being a tall, slender man tended to be the nicknames that I went with. But that was all about me. I think that we glossed right over the fact that Cheshire, your name, is all based on the Cheshire Cat, the classic Alice in Wonderland character.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that's fully why I was given that name, but anyone who knows me can fill in the blanks.
All right, look, I'll leave it there. I have a feeling that the Alice in Wonderland discussion will bring some more of that out of you as we go anyway.
You know, you're probably right. That's a good point.
I don't know how much there is to establish today other than that. We are going to be talking about the Disney classic animated film Alice in Wonderland, because this show talks about animation, and there are tons of other versions of Alice in Wonderland out there, from books to movies, but many of the other adaptions are live action. None are coming to mind off the top of my head that are actually a direct animated version, other than the Disney one. Can you think of any?
No, there's the 1920s version, which I'm pretty sure it was 1920. There's a silent film, Alice in Wonderland, that came out ages ago. There's obviously the books, the animated version, the bad one. Excuse my French. There's two bad ones.
You don't care for the live action Disney version from about 20 years ago.
I think that is a fair way to phrase that.
Okay. I will also mention another Disney Alice property. The very first thing that Walt Disney did for Disney was the Alice comedies, which was a live-action little girl named Alice who stumbled through an animated world of Wonderland. So it was kind of the Mary Poppins style, way before Disney even did Mickey Mouse. So he was experimenting with that kind of thing, which I think is some interesting history.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So I guess that would be the closest thing, because that world was animated, even though the girl was live action. But it was still a very similar depiction, just because I think Walt Disney was always wanting to make something like Wonderland as grand as it became, which is a very beautiful, colorful world with a lot of oddities and weirdness and unexplained questions and things that just make you tilt your head a little bit. And I think over the course of animation history, we've gotten a lot of wild, you might say trippy, styles of animation. And it might be fair to say that Wonderland in some way was like an early version of that style.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the godfathers of it. I mean, I think that and Yellow Submarine, as well as the things that influenced those animation styles, I believe are the things that influenced much trippier things that came later. Films like Paprika, animated projects like Adventure Time took a lot of animation influence from the trippy elements. There's a ton. I could go off on a rant about it.
Cool. Well, while we are discussing the Disney version today, even if you haven't seen it, I bet you are somewhat familiar with the Alice in Wonderland story. And I wouldn't say that there's anything that spoilery, so this should be fun regardless of whether you're a fan of the movie or not.
The great thing, one of the greatest things about this story is that there's nothing you can spoil because it is the experience that's fun. And I'd almost say that's a mark of good storytelling. You know what I mean? If knowing the ending of a story ruins it, I don't know. I guess I can't totally say that because sometimes the drama of a cliffhanger or a twist is important. But I like movies that you don't, you know, knowing the ending doesn't impact how much you love it.
Yeah, well, and it is linear in that Alice is going through an experience through this wonderful, interesting place that's so different from her home. But it's non-linear in that it really is a set of several things that happen to her rather than character progression all the way through.
Definitely.
So with all of that said, let's sail away to Wonderland with the best sound effect that Cheshire over here has in store. I really need to ask you to stop doing that.
That was my favorite one yet.
To be honest, audience, I was so relieved that Lou decided that was what he wanted to do, just because I don't want to go to the trouble of adding the sound effect in every episode.
Yeah.
So I've been lazy. Like, all right, he can do this. And I
that's
just
what you
it
get.
You know, you decide to be lazy and you reap the consequences. So, all right, here we are. It's Wonderland. Lou, could you please describe what the people are seeing?
Quite well. I see it often. There are, man. Okay. So I almost, there's so much to this world. It's almost hard to know where to start. Singing flowers come to mind. Doors that open into rooms that are bigger on the inside than they are on the outside, and vice versa, contrary wise, even some would say. Let's see. Talking animals everywhere. The Red Queen is the royal monarch of parts, at least, of this region. There's the beautiful neon forest where the Cheshire Cat exists and presumably goes other places too, but I kind of get the vibe that his home region is that trippy forest. Wow, there's so much to this. There's little potions that say drink me that do funny things. That might be how we got here in the first place.
Yeah, let's talk about how we got here in the first place, because I actually think this is a very interesting way to approach this, and maybe we should have dove right into this.
Yeah.
But in the process of your goofy laugh, if it could be called that in the spirit of Disney,
sure.
We went down the rabbit hole, which is the exact experience that Alice herself had falling into this experience. And when you fall down the rabbit hole, if in my memory, you're kind of seeing like just a long, what seems to be an endless chamber before you just end up in this room with a
talking flying
door.
You're actually, you end up flying for a little bit. You float and there's stuff falling from the sky.
That's right. There are things falling. That is true.
At first, normal things like teacups and tables. And then clocks, and then things that get a little bit stranger as you fall. And then you hit the ground, and yes, there's a talking door. Quite a polite talking door, I think, at first.
Yeah, and so in this room, all you really have is this door, a table, and I think, is it a straight-up potion, or is it like a cookie? Something that says, eat me.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's a cookie. The first one's a cookie. There's one that says drink me. I don't remember which is first, honestly. I think the eat me is the big one and then drink me is the small one.
Right. So one of them makes you grow. One of them makes you shrink. I think that's important context.
Both of them make you feel real funny, though.
That is true. And we see Alice experience both, you know, being very upset about being too big and then being small enough to where she can actually go through the door. There's also water involved. She ends up like blowing through this door. And I think that you can't go to Wonderland. Like, I almost feel like maybe I can't set this rule because of the premise of our show, but there is no other way to enter Wonderland other than through the rabbit hole, regardless of what we decide to end up being today. Is that a fair statement?
I mean, I've gotten there other ways, but yeah, that's a fair thing to say.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, we're going to have lots of allegories from Cheshire over here today.
From my past, not my present or future, just to clarify.
Yeah, I think that's a good clarification.
Well, I chose the right shirt for this today.
Yeah, you're right. The audience who is only hearing the audio is loving the shirt.
Oh, yeah. It's got lots of wavy smiley faces on it.
Yeah, it is cool. Sure. Well, anyway, we've stumbled in through this door. Let me just start by saying, I think in terms of logistics, we really are either entering as a human who is exploring the oddities of Wonderland, who may be able to grow or shrink if we, you know, eat the right thing, or yes. We could be one of the oddities that inhabits Wonderland. I'm not and that oddity could be like a very wide spectrum of things, if that was how we decided to approach it. But I think that that sort of sums it up in terms of what the options are. Can you think of anything
that
else?
Sounds right.
That's good.
The not that aren't just jokes. That's what's coming to my mind. There might be more, but I'm in a silly mindset, so it's hard for me to say.
Sure. And I will note that Alice chased a white rabbit into this rabbit hole that starts all of this adventure. Yes. And I think that there's an interesting allegory about the white rabbit being chased. And in a way, you're sort of like chasing your imagination. I think in a way, I feel this way about our show. That we are chasing our white rabbit across these different cartoon worlds to find the place where we most belong. Is that apt poetic. To you?
That's poetic. I like it. I like to Good. Think we are the white rabbit, actually. And the audience is chasing us.
Oh, I like the spin on it. All right. So anyway, I think we've established what Wonderland is. One way or the other, we end up like touching the talking doorknob, which I don't know if is honestly okay, or it just we float through the keyhole, however it goes.
Yeah, whether we're big or small, we keep on keeping on.
That's right. And then we really get to see Wonderland. And I almost want to go through this scene by scene, because that's sort of how Alice experiences it. And I think that might be fun. What do you think?
I think it'll at least be helpful for navigating the different places we could end up, because it's such a chaotic story that, like, I don't remember it very linearly, so that would help me.
Great. So immediately, we end up in the shoreline, which has a caucus race happening.
Yes.
And normally, I think that's like a phrase for an election. Yeah. Certain states will do caucuses where people have to actually show up and talk about their candidate. No, that is not what this is. This is a literal race with mini birds and other animal creatures. And they're Correct. Taking it very seriously.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, just to speak some homage to the original creation and in the intent, this whole book is just like layered with tons of political allegory. Or not the movie as much, but maybe the movie too. But the book is absolutely just riddled with political commentary. And this was one of the funniest ones, because it's essentially a bunch of people, or animals, I guess, symbolically representing people, politicians specifically, that are running in a circle with the ocean constantly going over everybody except for the tallest, which you could plug in the meaning to that.
Interesting.
But it's essentially a bunch of politicians running in a circle, arguing over who's going to run this rat race, with the people who are actually running the show being the only ones who aren't being constantly drowned.
Yes. Also taking place in the shoreline is a story that is told narratively a little bit later, called The Walrus and the Carpenter. Some people may have heard about.
That's right.
All you really need to know is that there are a bunch of baby oysters, and the walrus likes to eat baby oysters. And the poem is all about the walrus's quest to eat said baby oysters.
So that's all you need to know.
Between the caucus race and the walrus and the carpenter, you are already getting a picture of the weirdness of this place. Yeah. Non-linear is the easiest way to put it.
Yeah. I would say that, like, technically it is a linear story in a way. It's just that it's a story where there really isn't a story. You know what I mean? There's not really, like, a beginning, middle, and end. Alice is just experiencing the whole movie.
Yeah, it's interesting. I kind of like the depiction of the shoreline. You know, it feels very beachy, but it's not groundbreaking in terms of a setting. Not like what we are about to get later in the film.
No. Well, and also the Walrus and the Carpenter is a flashback story, so it's kind of up for debate if that's even technically part of the world. Or if it's
I agree. It could just be a story. And to sort of use that as an opportunity to get to the next thing, Alice sort of stumbles upon what seems to be a foresty area, and there's these characters, Tweedledee and Tweedledum, that she's really just trying to get away from, but they don't want her to go, so they tell her this story about the Walrus and the Carpenter. I don't really think that those characters are significant for this conversation, but the forest will be. And
the forest is absolutely significant, I think.
And there's different parts. You know, to be honest, I think that there's some debate about where the forest starts and where it ends and what's part of it and what's not. But I can tell you that it is not too far from this scene where Alice gets to see the meadow of living flowers, which is a really lovely, amazing scene that I remember very fondly from the film.
I also remember it quite fondly. They sing, they're really nice until they realize she's human.
That is true. What do you think about the idea of being a flower in the world of Alice in Wonderland?
You know, I love movement so much that I think that would suck for me.
Yes,
like it seems chill, they're singing and stuff, but you know, I considering how well, I guess I can't say expansive, but considering how wild this world is, I would definitely want to be someone who could travel and move around and see a lot of it.
Yeah.
And be a weird agent of maniacal chaos amongst it, maybe even, probably.
Okay. No, yeah, I think that is fair. I love the song All in the Golden Afternoon. In fact, I will say that the entire score of Alice in Wonderland is one of my favorites in animation history.
It is very good, I agree.
It really just has this lovely, whimsical vibe that is really feel good. If that's the kind of music vibe that we're getting by moving here, it would be a very tempting choice for me.
Yeah, I really do love the music of this whole thing. I think that, you know, it's interesting how vibes play such a role in how we actually factor in things. Because that was one of the biggest reasons I liked Hilda, was just the vibe.
Me too.
You know what I mean? And it's like, having the music and the animation style really does make a difference for my decision, and this definitely hits for both of those for me.
And you know what, bro? I think the vibe has maybe been the biggest factor in just about every choice that I've made. There's something about the place that draws me in a little bit more. And it's not a guarantee. Like, I would say that, surprisingly, the Pokemon vibe does not draw me in that much, but the logistics are so awesome that I would love to be a Pokemon trainer.
Yeah, I was actually going to make a similar comparison. I agree with that.
And on the other end, I feel like Neverland has great, wonderful, nostalgic vibes, but I would never want to live there for logistic reasons. So it's not a one-to-one.
True. That's a good way of explaining it. I agree.
But it makes a difference. It really does. And I mean, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't have a little bit of a temptation to eat the cookie or drink the tea.
Drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. So we have the living flowers, and like you said, they don't love Alice, but she also meets a caterpillar that is sitting on a mushroom in this area. And once again, maybe not a huge factor. The mushroom is shown to be in a different place. It's not exactly in the same location. So it is just like one peak behind Alice being very small and being able to experience this world as like insect size. And is it worth mentioning that the caterpillar smokes hookah?
Yes, because now we know that tobacco is canonically able to be smoked here, which I'm not a tobacco person. However, I did try hookah, and it's fun to blow O's with, like rings, you know?
Yes, I knew some friends who were into that. Still very, very not me.
Blowing rings is fun, and he's got like a super magical way of blowing rings into like crazy fantasy creatures, and that is an ability that I would like to have.
But he is also rude, and now we're going from rude flowers, rude caterpillar. Honestly, I feel like the people in Wonderland are not that nice, and that would be a factor for me in terms of deciding if I wanted to live there.
Are they not nice, though, or is Alice just kind of pissing them off?
Wow, the great question of morality.
Well, because here's the thing, right? Alice is like your blind tourist who's just walking in and like not following any... Like, are all social rules arbitrary? Totally, that's part of the point of the story. But she is breaking all of their arbitrary social policies. And really, she's the one being rude.
Wow, okay, wait, this is really interesting. So you're saying that Alice is visiting Disney World and... all of these insects and flowers and citizens are the Disney employees that are getting tired of the shenanigans, the people that don't know the rules.
Yeah, dude, she's the child pulling at the mascot's tail.
Okay, this is so interesting. Okay, so let's assume that we are not then Alice, that we are perhaps... Well, so here's the problem. Even if we're not Alice, even if we are not a curious little child, which I am anyway.
I'm not Alice. I totally walked into this world and I'm like, oh yeah, this reminds me of life experiences. Okay. I can fit in here.
But I don't believe that you would just be able to pick up all of their social nuances and understand the rules, even with the argument that you're making.
No, but I wouldn't be asking a bunch of stupid questions and like you approached life more cautiously than she does.
Yeah, I guess you would have to, especially if you're in a world that, for all you know, could be very dangerous. She has no sense of danger almost through the entire film.
All I know is when I was talking to elves and fairies, I was always very courteous and tried to give them the space to talk. And I was listening.
Right. Well, that is courteous of you, and I bet that they would appreciate it.
I think they did, personally.
I was still trying to talk about Wonderland, trying to keep the ship.
Yeah, me too.
Good. Let's talk about the White Rabbit's house.
Yeah.
Because it is not far from now where Alice sort of makes her way out of these flowers and foresty area that she's stumbled upon and ends up growing again by accident.
Yes.
The poor White Rabbit, he's just late, you know? Haven't we all been late and are trying to get to our appointment?
That's his whole personality dynamic, is he's just late. Yeah, you wouldn't want to be him.
Even if he is a deeper metaphor for us chasing mysticism, at the end of the day, his character, as it is really just trying to make it on time so that the queen doesn't chop off his head.
Yeah, I guess that's more of the movie than the book's perspective. But I don't know. I guess I'd have to read it again. It's been a long time.
I will say, I didn't pick that up from the book as much.
I didn't either.
For all I know, the movie didn't even intend that, and I'm just putting things out there, but I like a good metaphor.
I wouldn't say mysticism. I'd say she's chasing curiosity.
You're right. Actually, that's probably the actual simpler meaning, and that's good. I feel like it's not fair to move into the White Rabbit's house because A, it belongs to him, and B, doesn't really because Alice destroyed it.
Yeah, well, but what we do know then is that you can be a talking animal, work at the Queen's court, and have a nice suburban house.
That is a good point. That is an option that's on the table.
Actually, I think the White Rabbit really symbolizes the average, like, you know, working class citizen, your average white man.
Well, he is the White Rabbit, literally.
Yeah, and he's always late and so stressed about making it to his job. Oh, yeah, woe is he. That's just being alive normally.
And he feels like his boss is going to chop his head off. Like, you know, they got a...
Yeah.
And you know what? There might be something to that.
And if you get fired, you might as well because you're being financially held hostage so that you can't live.
Yeah, not that it matters. He doesn't have a house anymore because Alice destroyed it by growing.
Facts. I hope you had person insurance.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm glad that we visited the White Rabbit's former house so that we know a house could exist if it were not destroyed by a curious little girl.
We also met a lizard who represents your underclass chimney guy. He was the chimney sweep. Remember?
He was Bill the Lizard. I got that.
Yeah. And I actually do remember reading. I read this in school. And part of his analysis was he actually was representing an underclass worker who was therefore the middle class white man.
All right, you guys ready for some Disney trivia? Bill the Lizard makes a cameo in The Great Mouse Detective as one of Radigan's henchmen.
That's awesome. I totally didn't know that.
Yep.
That's actually really cool.
I'm here for the random Disney trivia, so I'll just ask whatever you need to know.
That's genuinely awesome.
Yes. All right, good. I got a good fact for the bro.
I like that.
Shortly after we visit the White Rabbit's house, I think that we meander over to the Tuggly Wood. And this might be my favorite part to talk about.
Is it actually called that?
It's or sorry, Tulgey Wood. I might have the pronunciation wrong. It's T-U-L-G-E-Y.
That is a ridiculous name, and I love it.
Yes. Now, you mentioned that the Cheshire Cat inhabits here.
Assumedly. I don't actually know. He kind of travels.
Well, I think that's something that's very fun about this. It's funny. This was about the time that I would fall asleep when mom and dad would show us this VHS when we were little.
No way.
Yeah, because it started to get a little bit later into it. And also everything gets a little bit darker for a second because you kind of have blackness and then these almost like fluorescent colors that emerge from signposts and different places that are telling you that you're going the wrong way or the right way, or you're not supposed to know where you're going. And the Cheshire Cat is there to kind of guide you along and reaffirm, yes, in fact, those signposts are correct. You don't know where you're going and you can walk any which way.
Well, and it's so funny because when you really think about it, I mean, he's just trolling at the end of the day. But Alice is like, well, which way is this place that, like, did she actually straight up ask where England might be or something like that?
Maybe. She's from London, which is worth saying because London is canon in this world, and we could go to London if we really wanted to, even though we barely see it.
I guess that's true. Yeah, technically, in the scope of Alice in Wonderland, we could awake from this opium nightmare and have a have a normal British experience.
Is that not the British experience?
For a long time, it was.
So we are off the rails. I love this area. It is so whimsical and fun. Now, exploring it would be a little bit scary because who wants to feel lost in the dark woods anywhere?
With the right set of mind, it's actually quite fun.
Oh my God. Okay, maybe.
God damn. I wish I could talk about a fun experience I had getting lost in a forest, but that's not safe for work.
Oh my goodness. You basically... I'm not gonna let this go any further yet.
Let's just say, I actually that's too much. I won't get into that.
All right. I wish I could though.
Oh well.
Despite the fact that it's very dark and Cheshire Cat is a sort of just like a creepy guy in the woods who's
He's not creepy. He's delightful. He's whimsical. He's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. He is the definition of meeting somebody who's trying to find philosophical value in something and just straight up giving them silly answers for lols.
That is all true. But if I was in these woods, that's not exactly what I'm looking for.
Or a cat. Cats are cute. He's cute. I think he's cute.
At least he's a cat. That helps. If he was a man, I'd be very worried.
If he was the Mad Hatter doing that same shtick with that smile, I'd book it. That is terrifying.
Now, speaking of the Mad Hatter, he also lives in these woods. And
yeah,
he's
that's where
got
the tea parties are.
That's right. He has a tea party that we see in the film with the March Hare and the Dormouse. There's just a little mouse who is only there for a couple of gags and doesn't really have any plot relevance.
Man, if anybody's zonked in this shit, in this movie, it's those guys.
That is true. So they are going around sharing different teas and assortments that they have. And they invite Alice to the tea party at first. Seems like it's going well.
Questionable.
It's all very questionable. But the Mad Hatter, I believe, does live there. It may not be explicitly stated, but they at least have tea parties in this forest in the midst of the darkness.
Yes. And for what it's worth, she seems to get... See, here's another example of where she doesn't follow their arbitrary social policies and she gets very upset with them because she thinks they're mad. But they were just having a tea party. You rolled up on their event, Alice.
That's true. And they were relatively welcoming at first.
Yeah. You got to move to the left. Just do it. You don't need to know why. Social rules are weird.
It's true. Alice asks so many questions, and I can't help but feel like I would be a similar person. I hate to say it. Because I also ask a lot of questions.
Let's just say, whenever I say let's just say, you can read a lot into it. Let's just say, one time I hung out at a party that had people under the mindset that caused for conversations that were very alike to this Tea Party conversation. And you just kind of gotta laugh and enjoy it and get whatever meaning you can out of it. And just kind of be there and have fun, you know?
That would be good advice for Alice, is enjoy the present moment. Maybe that would be good advice for me.
Yeah, you just gotta let go. Don't ask any questions. Just experience life. They're not going to be able to answer your questions anyway. Listen to them.
I do relate so much to Alice's curiosity. I had a blog that was called Alec in Wonderland when I started off my Disney college program internship.
And I remember that.
It's very cringy, and I'm thankful that nobody can find it now.
Oh, yeah?
But it speaks to, you know, my fascination with the story of Alice in Wonderland and the fact that I like a good pun.
Your blog. I was keeping up with your life through it.
You're such a good brother. You really are sometimes.
That's not true. Sometimes. Maybe sometimes.
I appreciated how much you cared. And it was fun for me. When you're young and you're just like trying to express yourself creatively, that's the kind of stuff you do.
Isn't that funny that you went with the moniker Alec in Wonderland and I ended up as the Cheshire Cat?
Wow, that's true.
that's very funny to me. I like that.
Well, I think that this movie was both kind of formative for us.
Totally.
Growing up, it really was one of my favorite three Disney movies. Yeah. It was this, Peter Pan, and Fantasia.
It's still one of my favorites. It's one of my top five Disney movies. Top five Disney exclusively. I don't know if it's... It might just not be in my top 10 anymore because I now have so many beloveds, but it's up there.
Yeah, I always love talking about it and rewatching it. No matter how many times I've seen it, this is one that doesn't grow old to me. Another classic that I love is Pinocchio. That would be a fun one to talk about. They've got a lot of interesting locations in there. Pleasure Island. Ooh.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that would be really... I want to watch that movie again because that's... See, I have such a soft spot for some of these old Disney movies because they're an era of Disney that was family-friendly, but like also kind of dark and messed up at the same time. You know, like... Pinocchio is a freaking dark movie. Like, when you watch that kid get turned into a donkey, it is actually, like, nightmare fuel.
Yeah, honestly, I love how edgy some of that original stuff is. Snow White itself has some pretty dark imagery.
Yeah, with the ending. I guess I won't spoil it if you haven't seen it.
Sure.
You know Snow White is the first fully animated film?
Yeah, well, because that was...
Of course you did. Why am I asking you? Of course you would know that.
Because Walt Disney made the first feature animated film, and it was a big deal at Carthay Circle in Southern California, and you the year too, 1937.
Hey, and the way that they did water, and the way that they did like rivers trickling, was like land, it was technologically so innovative. Just the way that they were able to animate water, it changed how water was animated for forever.
Yeah, it was a massive gamble, too, because they poured so much money into this. And Walt Disney was unwilling for it to not be great. They redid things. He's like, no, there's no way this will succeed unless it's perfect. And people went to the theaters and they thought it was one of the coolest things that had ever been done. And that's sort of what paved the way for Disney to do many more films like that.
Yeah, and then we get a land of strange fairy tales. I love that Alice in Wonderland ended up being one of these interesting fairy tales that they told.
Yes, it also has a ride at Disneyland, not at Disney World in Florida, but at Disneyland in California, which is one of my favorites.
Alice in Wonderland?
It does, yeah.
Yes, I know, I love it. I didn't know, I forgot it was not in Disney World. When I found that out, everyone, I was in Disney World with Alec, and I was like, where's the Alice in Wonderland ride? And he's like, there's not one in Disney World. And I was so, so heartbroken.
Yeah, we used to have a Mr. Toad ride, but that's gone in Disney World. They still have that one in Disneyland, but
they
actually
do have a gravestone for it in the Haunted Mansion lot, though.
It's true. For Mr. Toad.
Yeah.
Speaking to your earlier point about the darkness, though, the early dark rides, as they were called at Disneyland, were called that. They're literally called dark rides because there is actual darkness to them. Every one of the originals, like there's a Snow White ride, Pinocchio, Mr. Toad, and
the Winnie the Pooh ride.
Well, the Winnie the Pooh ride came later.
Oh, you mean like the originals?
Right. So the originals, they were called dark rides, not only because they were rides through the dark that had these really interesting pieces of scenery, but they were also literally dark in theme. Like they were scary and freaked kids out a little bit.
Wow.
All three of those rides that I just mentioned, really actually scary.
Yeah, I guess so. That like the I'll never forget. I know that they've made it less scary since, but I remember when I was a kid and the Snow White figure turned around in that ride.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? The what's the character's name?
I can't. The Wicked Queen.
Thank you, the Wicked Queen. I always want to say Maleficent, but that's someone else. The Wicked Queen like turns around from the mirror and ends up the, you know, grizzly old version holding the apple, and it turns around fast and there's this like big sound effect. Like it was actually scary.
Yeah.
And it's now still probably rides, scary. It's probably dark a little bit mellow.
Sure. Dark rides don't have to be dark now, but just thought that history was worth sharing.
I didn't know that.
Getting back, transitioning into the darkness of Alice in Wonderland and the weirdness of this forest. I, even though it's not something that appeals to me, like I would not want to be caught in this forest. I just love it as a fan. You know,
you are
really thinking about this, aren't you?
Well, I have a story where I experienced something like this for real. I really did. And it was so cool. It was awesome. I loved it. I was at this lovely Oregon festival, and oh, there were just neon trees everywhere. And I thought there was a big forested wall in front of me, and there wasn't. But I thought there was for a while, and there were these little creatures coming in and out of it. It was so beautiful. And it was really dark. It was like midnight. It was really late at night. And it just reminded me of that scene. I felt like I was actually in Alice in Wonderland. Don't do drugs, kids.
I thought we were about to get out of that without you explicitly saying it.
I just felt like I was explicit enough that I should like still give the good advice that I'm not actually recommending people do things.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, let's get to the Queen of Hearts and her castle and the surrounding labyrinth and royal area that surrounds it.
I think this is the scariest place in the show, personally. It's where bureaucracy happens.
Well, that's true. And the Queen of Hearts is vicious. She will literally, like, get you beheaded if you're not doing very specific rules that she wants. And that's not good.
Yeah, like, everyone else has been rude, but no one else has been straight up like, I will cut off your head if you don't do this extremely arbitrary. Now, that is law in the United States and Britain.
However, I love the labyrinth. I love the hedge maze, and I would love to explore that maze. Is it worth the chance that the queen could cut off my head? I'll be honest, bro. I think the queen would cut off my head. I think I'd be a lot of trouble in a place like this. Like, I think she would take one look at me and be like, oh, you're done.
Isn't that funny that you'd be the miscreant in this world?
Yes, you're right. That is exactly right. And you would not. You'd be the queen's buddy, I bet.
Oh, no, I wouldn't go anywhere near that place. I'd be the Cheshire Cat.
Okay, that's true.
I would show up just to troll people and then disappear so nobody would know I was there.
Okay, wait, actually, this is becoming interesting. You could be, are there multiple Cheshire Cats? Is there only one? Could there be more? Does he have a family? And you could be a cat just like him that has similar characteristics.
Yo, I'm not saying I don't like it.
All right, well, listen.
That'd be
how
so
much,
cool.
Well, let me just add a little bit of context to the Queen's area. Her whole thing is because she's the Queen of Hearts, it's all very card themed. The four suits of cards, the hearts, the spades, the clubs, and the diamonds.
Yeah.
And there are literal card soldiers that are like the two of hearts and the five of diamonds and all of those.
And actually, that represents a class system too. The black cards are the underclass ones. There's your symbolism for that whole thing.
And then that's in the movie?
Yeah. All the black ones are the ones that are on their hands and knees doing gardening and stuff. And the red ones are like the soldiers that are like the queen's men.
That is some like surprisingly high level commentary for that time.
Right? Oh, yeah, dude. Lewis Carroll was ahead of his time. 100%. And I mean, I think Walt Disney probably was, too. I don't know. I go back and forth sometimes when I see some of the stuff he was politically involved in. But I digress.
Yeah, I honestly, there could be an entire podcast on that alone. It's a very fascinating topic, which yeah. I know a lot about. And I, my honest opinion on it is that, and again, people, I know that a lot of people have feelings about like early Disney, and I will say that there's a lot of misinformation out there. Totally. Lou knows that this is one thing that I've actually researched to a really legitimately,
yeah. You can consider Alec an expert on this stuff, 100%, if you're listening to this. I say don't listen to us jokingly all the time, but this is something you can actually, like, he's actually put in his time and research into this stuff.
Yeah, so, and here's what I'll say. Walt Disney was somebody with his heart in the right place that didn't know exactly everything that was right, but he was trying to get it right.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely believed in, I would say, the equality of people, and cared a lot about making his park a place that all kinds of people could go. But I think that he was also a product of his time and just was ignorant to a lot of things.
Yeah. I mean, something he was part of the Red Scare and like denounced communism, but there was a lot of political pressure to do that at the time. And he also wanted to make Disney World essentially his own communist state. So how anti-communist was he really?
Right. I know that he would probably never think about it like that.
Yeah, but, of course. But that's totally exactly what it was.
Yeah, I will say
studied that in a philosophy class.
The stuff that's out there on Family Guy and things making jokes about him being like straight up racist or anti-Semitic, there is absolutely nothing to corroborate any of that in true historic records. So yeah, I think that's important true. To state. But there's definitely a lot of themes in Disney movies that are problematic when you look back at them. That don't hold up at all, especially when it comes to Native Americans. But that was a lot of cartoons of the day, excuse it. But there's a lot of that, especially like Peter Pan and, you know, it's just, know your history. Understand that some of these things were the product of the time. You can have nostalgia for them, but then we always want to learn from it and do better. That's all I would have to say.
And tying it into what Alice in Wonderland, I think what I love about this story and the show in this world is what it really does is show you just how crazy our actual lives are and just how absolutely senseless our own systems of morality and judgment are.
Well, I think the senselessness of life is kind of a very fun thing that makes Wonderland unique. It is playing at the absurdity of life that many of us choose to ignore.
Yeah, and I think it's playing at the absurdity of, like, I think, well, I miss more so the book probably, but it's playing at the absurdity of, like, our political socioeconomic structure.
Definitely. Well, before we get too carried away, Lou, and close this up, I did have some questions from Asmi in the Discord chat. Is Wonderland custom to whoever falls into it, or is it always the same?
Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, walking into this experiment under the assumption that it's always the same, and not like Puss in Boots 2.
Yeah, I just... What do you mean not like Puss in... Oh, I see, like the Last Wish map thing.
Yeah, there's a map that it literally guides you and the world becomes... It adapts to you as a person. I don't think Wonderland is like that.
No, I get more of the vibe that it exists in of itself, and it's just weird.
And he brings up a really good point. Is any food safe to eat?
Well, I mean, we already know some things will make your body change. So I'm going to go out on a limb here and say no.
I feel like that's a red flag. Like, if us walking in, not know, maybe we could learn from others. But Alice doesn't talk to a single person who can give her real advice the entire trip. So... I don't know.
I want what the Mad Hatter's having. That's all I'm going to know. I'm just kidding.
And are there any rules? Are they always changing? Are you safe from the monarchy? Who's friend and foe? I think these are all really important questions that make me question, I guess, if this is actually a good idea to move to a place like this. I think it's almost so frenetic. I can't handle this level of unpredictability.
See, I really think I play into the like symbology of this world. I think it's really not that different from ours. We just know our customs, so it doesn't feel that way. But if you're an alien and you came to Earth and tried to hang out with humans, it would feel like you were in Wonderland, 100%. Be like, none of this stuff makes any sense. There are ridiculous rules, and people get upset over things that don't make any sense all the time. You know, like,
no, that's absolutely true.
If you're at a dinner table and you like wipe your mouth with the tablecloth you know, to civilized blah, blah, whatever people. They're like, no, how dare you? That's a dirty thing to do with your mouth. But like nobody would know that unless you were raised that way, you know?
There's That's a good point.
There's a million and a half things like that in every single culture. And I think Wonderland is just a thought experiment to show you just how silly it is when you're coming in as an outsider.
Okay. I think if you could align yourself with the Cheshire Cat out of the gate and he sees you as a friend, you might be fine in this world. I think that might be able to guide you in the right direction.
Yeah, dude. Well, I mean, I think that the whole deal is you don't care what direction you're going. I think that it's a laissez-faire place to end up, because if you end up with the Cheshire Cat and you say, where's this place? He's like, you're a punk. I'm going to get you.
All right. And Lou, you just put into words a perfect transition, because I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I would not live in Wonderland.
Wow.
And it is for the reason, it's the thing that you just put into words that I hadn't really thought about exactly. The whole point of Wonderland is you don't know where you're going. And I do need some direction, you know, for what I'm looking for. I don't need all direction, but I need some kind of a compass. I think that Wonderland scares me because I really just, maybe it would be good for me. Like, it would be good for me to spend a week in Wonderland.
Yeah, you gotta let just, what does John Lennon say? Turn off your mind, relax, and flow downstream.
Oh, yeah, in the Beatles song. Oh, which one is it?
Day in the Life.
It's a day in the life. Wow. Well, I'm actually not 100% sure that's right. Is it?
Or no, maybe it's Within You, Without You.
That's the one I think it is.
Yeah,
I think
it's Within You, Without You.
Which is a deeper cut and more impressive that you grabbed those lyrics, I think.
However, that stuff is part of my DNA now.
But could I live here? Hell no. Not for me. However, the discussion of walking through Wonderland is one of my favorites that we've had on the show.
Dude, I would absolutely live there.
Okay.
No question for me. I think that, just hanging out with these nonsensical people, being able to let go of some of the, I mean, I think the rules that we have here are crazier than anything we see in Wonderland, personally.
So and, that's it.
Yeah, I could totally relax and be like, wow, this place is so wacky. All y'all are crazy. Let's go. Can I say random stuff too?
I bet you would have fun. I don't doubt that. To be honest, I see this as the single most polarizing place that you and I have talked about in terms of like the disparity between us wanting to be there.
That's so funny. I would absolutely. Yeah, some would say I've spent some time there in my life already.
You're like, absolutely yes. And I'm like, absolutely no. And we don't come to those verdicts very often. Usually it's at least a little bit closer. Not
you
this wanna, time.
You want to know why I wouldn't move there, though, from Owl House?
Oh, I do. What's the reasoning?
Kind of already been there before. I've been there, done that.
So you've already moved.
I've moved on. I don't need to go back to that kind of lifestyle.
This is like pre-Avatar The Last Airbender, our first episode that you've lived.
Yeah, I've gone through that kit and caboodle once, probably more times than I've needed already in my life, and I would prefer to be studying with the witches and warlocks still, rather than, go back and, don't get me wrong, I think that there's always a lovely time for the turn off your mind and go into some place that's just nonsensical. Like, I'm still here for that, but I need a little more time before I would want to jump right back into living there, especially because Owl House is already so cool.
Okay, well, that is fair. Let me ask, if you had to live there, where would you live and as who?
Oh, I would totally be like one of, like, if I could be a species of the Cheshire Cat, I would. Or, you know, whatever, however, whatever variation of that, if I could be another animal that's kind of can dematerialize and, you know, travel about and make jokes and just kind of troll outsiders. That sounds a lot of fun to me.
I'm having a hard time answering this myself because I don't want to go anywhere. And I don't want to be I don't want to be so boring as to pick London, but I'm really tempted.
No, you would. You so would. I want to be awake and not here at all. Dude, oh my god. You wouldn't even want to be like, you know, like the, I guess, yeah, no, you wouldn't even want to be like the White Rabbit.
No, I mean, he's charming, but he seems miserable.
The lizard seems a little happier.
The lizard seems okay. Everybody is, like, worried about the queen. I don't want to be a flower. Because then I can't move at all.
You can be the cat, but caterpillar's not all that happy.
I don't want to be part of the caucus race, because then I feel like I'm just part of the system.
You are a part of the caucus race, bud. Sorry.
Oh, no. Well, then I may as well go to London, where it's pleasant.
You're not wrong. That's kind of the moral of the story, isn't it?
I don't want to be a baby oyster being eaten, and I don't want to be a walrus eating the baby oysters.
You'd rather be the walrus than the oysters, let's be honest.
Maybe, but the walrus is mean. And
that's true.
Or at least inconsiderate.
You could be the carpenter, who I heard was a symbol for Jesus. I don't know if that's actually true.
Yeah, that would be a stretch to me. I don't want to be the caterpillar smoking hookah. I don't want to be a card soldier who's going to get my head cut off. I love all of these characters so much. I have nostalgia for them. I do not want to be them.
You could be in the royal family and be the submissive king.
Oh my god. That's maybe the safest. Submissive King is also my nickname.
God.
And I don't, god dude, I don't know. I feel like if I say London, I'm really calling myself out as being like the most boring person on a podcast ever.
It was your idea to come here.
It was, well, because it is a lot of fun to talk about, but it's just not, you know, I would love to be like Alice, a visitor who comes and goes, but maybe that's it. I want to live in London, but I do want to, I want to know where the rabbit hole is. I want to be able to jump down at once, have my adventure, and come home.
You'd be a wide-eyed 12-year-old boy who just gets absolutely fucked with from beginning to end.
Sure. I'm just going to accept that.
As the Cheshire Cat here, I've got a map for you, bud.
All right, well, maybe another time I will take a closer look at that map. But today, I am going to end this podcast.
I'll tell you right now, the map won't help you.
Fair enough. Next time, we are going to be going to the fairy world from Fairly Odd Parents, which I think is going to be another really interesting conversation.
Oh, that'll be a good one. I need to actually brush up on how many places there are, because the fairy world is actually pretty big as far as I know.
Well, that's one where it also would potentially make a lot of sense to be a child just in the regular world who has a fairy. But we're going to have to talk about all of that, because there's an interesting conversation to be had, I think.
Yeah, so, I already have thoughts.
Me too. I have a lot. All right. Well, this was season 2, episode 1. So thank you everybody for tuning in. We will see you in 2 weeks for the fairy world. Goodbye.
Peace.